from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of an exhibit of artist James Spencer Russell's work at the Indiana State Museum.
I'll get an overview of the upcoming Butler Arts Fest.
And I'll chat with Archer Silver and Kyle Long about how they're bringing a little Brazil to Indianapolis this spring. Plus, will be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Artist James Spencer Russell was an accomplished artist who, within the history of Indiana art, is unfortunately virtually unknown. He exhibited in the finest New York City galleries and other American galleries and museums during his lifetime, and now his work will finally be shown in a solo show at the Indiana State Museum. Travis DiNicola talked with the State Museum's Chief Curator of Fine Arts, Mark Rushman, to find out more.
Julie, Ron, Mark, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have all three of you here.
Great to be here.
And especially great to have you, Ron and Julie Kern, here today as collectors of James Spencer Russell. Looking forward to finding out more about that and how you found out about his work and what intrigues you about it. But, Mark, I want to start with you on this, if you could, because we were talking before we went on the air, and James Spencer Russell's work is incredible and yet not well known here. And I was starting to feel a little embarrassed that maybe I had not heard of him, but you really had not heard a lot of him either. But we're all learning more. So tell me what we know about sort of his brief biography.
Well, Russell was born in Monticello, Indiana in 1915. And he grew up in nearby Kiwanis, Indiana, a small town of about 600. And he lived there for the first 9 years of his life. At 9 years old, his family moved to New Mexico. He attended military school there and then went on to the University of New Mexico and then came back to the East Coast where he attended Yale, and then he enlisted in the Army in World War II. He has an incredible story. I mean,
and at Yale, he was studying set design for theater, right?
Correct, he was.
Which I think is a really sort of important part as we get to talking about his art later. But please go on. I mean, yeah.
Well, he was and it's important to remember that he was making art his entire life, even as a child, all the way up through. He didn't have formal art training early in his life, but it was something that he was always passionate about: literature, music, the arts. So he came out of World War II. He was on the East Coast. He went back to Yale, finished out his master's degree, and then he went to work for NBC Television during the Golden Age, 1948 to 1958. Had a very successful career there, worked on many important...
And he was doing sets, right, for TV?
Exactly.
Okay.
During, again, from black and white to color television. And then in about 1958, he made a career change, a pretty bold one, really. He gave up the work at NBC and went on to become a professional artist in New York City. So he had an extremely successful career there, showing some of the finest galleries, some of the finest museums. And then in about 1976, he took a major right turn in his life and moved back to Kiwanis, Indiana, where he finished out his life.
Really kind of fascinating story there. And do we know when he was being shown in the galleries and museums in New York back in the 60s and such, I mean, was there a crossover there with other pop artists at the time, contemporary artists? Do we know much about that history at all?
We have exhibition records, and yes, he was showing with some of the finest artists of the day. And it's important to remember that he was there during the advent of the pop movement. Maybe before it was the pop movement. He was making work that...
I mean, different pieces I've seen so far, and I've only seen photographs, but, you know, there's immediate reminder of Rauschenberg or Jasper Johns or Warhol, depending on the piece. Some really interesting stuff, even little Joseph Cornell, but...
Exactly. And he was exhibiting in galleries with these artists of the day, the important artists of the day. So they're... there are so many examples of his work where he's doing things similar to what the combines were, similar to what Rauschenberg and Jasper Johns and Louise Nevelson and so forth were doing. So I think the exhibition is going to be a real eye-opener for people to see the important work that this person did and his contributions to history.
Ron, Julie, let me turn it to the two of you. The two of you were not familiar with Russell's work either, I believe, until you attended an auction and first discovered it. Tell me about that experience and what it was that drew you into to his work.
You're right, Travis. We didn't recognize James Spencer Russell, but we attended an auction in Indianapolis back in 2006, and the work was available there. Mm-hmm. It was underneath some sheets in the back of the room, and it was going to go up for sale at the end of the day. We took a peek underneath the sheets and said, we're going to stick around to the end of the day. So that was our first exposure to Jim's work. It just spoke to us. It was so strong. And so varied in his approaches and his mediums. It was wonderful. So took some home that day, came back to several other auctions again and picked out some pieces that just had to live with. Enjoyed it so much.
Yeah, it was a very interesting situation where there was a very small group of people purchased the art from these auctions. And there were a couple of our friends, Tom Keebler and Steve Conant, that we would occasionally get together with after the auctions had happened. We would talk about this art from this person that we didn't know, and we didn't really know where he was from other than a place called Kiwana. And we would look at his work, we would talk about his work, and we would realize the incredible quality of it. And one day, I don't remember who, but somebody said, you know, we should really have a museum show for this work. It's that good. And 8 years later, since the first time we talked about that, we're finally having that. And little did Julie and I know, when we were standing in that auction room, that we would actually end up dedicating 3 years, parts of 3 years of our life researching Jim and his work, and working with the museum on the exhibition, and eventually also writing a book. So it's been quite a journey.
It really has been. And to be clear, I mean, you know, his work was certainly recognized in his lifetime. I know that he was shown at the Cleveland Museum of Art, as well as other galleries you had mentioned and such. But this is a first for Indiana, I believe, right, to have an exhibit of his work?
It is. And it's a unique story, and it's our pleasure to be able to tell it. You know, he was an Indiana artist. Mm-hmm. We're the Indiana State Museum and Historic Sites, so we're the perfect venue to do this exhibition.
Mark, I got to ask you, when you were first approached by this or first started learning about Russell's work, you had to be a little bit taken aback and surprised, I would imagine.
I was, because, you know, I've been in the business here for 30 years.
Yeah.
And like you, you would think we would have known of this artist, but the fact that he was working away in this small town, showing on occasion, but not a high-profile guy. When I first heard the name and it didn't ring a bell, I thought, well, you know, it might be something, you know, we're interested in still pursuing. Mm-hmm. But once I saw the work, just like Julie and Ron mentioned, once you see the work,
the quality,
and you see the quality of the work and the range of the work, it won me over immediately. So I have no reservations about the show. I think it's going to be a fantastic opportunity for everybody to see the work of this artist.
I want to go back to this book that the Kearns are working on or have worked on. I guess it's completed now. Is that correct?
Correct.
So, I mean, that's a real labor of love to take on as well. May I ask, the two of you, you've been collecting other work. You obviously know about art, but it's one thing to go from picking up a piece or two at an auction to organizing a museum exhibition and writing a book about an artist.
Well, at first we were asked to write the catalog essay by Rachel Perry, who was the retired arts curator she is now the retired arts curator when all of this started. And as Julie and I dug deeper and deeper, we started to peel away the layers of time and dirt and all of these things. And all of a sudden there was this incredible story about this man that lived his life for the sake of his art. And it just became obvious to us that this was going to be an important part of Indiana art history. And we took it upon ourselves to to make sure that there was a record of this gentleman's life and his artwork.
Now, I know that he died in 2000, and before any of you met him, none of you had a chance to meet him. But have you had a chance to interview people who did know him? Because, I mean, the way you talk about him, I mean certainly you're very intimate with his work, but it's almost as if you feel like you know him, it sounds like.
Well, although we didn't meet Jim, you're correct, we had firsthand knowledge through a very good, close friend of Jim's named Wade Bussert. And Wade resides in Kiwanis, Indiana. And Wade and Jim were friends and knew each other when Jim moved back to Kiwanis in 1976. So for 24 years, mm-hmm. they were neighbors. And during that time period, Wade was able to learn a lot about Jim. They were able to share art together, as Wade is an artist as well. And Wade is the safekeeper of all of Jim's personal items. So Wade not only knows stories about Jim, he actually has a lot of documents. And going through all of that information is what made us realize that there was a big story here to be told and to share.
So what's one thing you can share about him that you were surprised to find out, something you can share with us?
Well, I think what surprised us the most was, and it was basically from the question of why didn't we know who this guy was?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you start seeing catalogs where he's exhibiting with Rauschenberg and Cornell and Nevelson, you kind of scratch your head and you realize that he was an artist of the purest kind. He lived life just for his art. The people he knew, the circles he ran in were just incredible. But his main thing was always his art. And he was not a social climber. He was not interested in the limelight. It was a very pure thing. And yet everything was always of the highest quality. And he produced until basically the week before he passed away. I mean, that was what he did. Mm-hmm. He made art.
Mark, have you had interest from art historians about this exhibit? I mean, I would think also, I mean, just looking at sort of the theatrical nature of the work, the pop culture, the pop style of Russell's work, that he had to be an influence on other artists as well.
I anticipate we will once this show opens up. I mean, it is a reintroduction of his work. It'll be new for many, many people. So I'm sure we're going to receive a lot of questions and inquiries about the exhibition and about Russell's life. The other thing I'd like to mention is if you have interest in Russell's work as it relates to the content and so forth, he was very much influenced by James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake. So if you have an interest in literature and the relationship between literature and the visual arts, this is an exhibition for you.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to it very much. I want to thank you all, Julie, Ron, Mark. Thanks for coming into Art of the Matter today. Great to learn about this fantastic artist.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with the Indiana State Museum's Chief Curator of Fine Arts, Mark Rushman. You can go see the exhibit of James Spencer Russell's work at the museum from April 4th through October 12th. More information is at indianamuseum.org, indianamuseum.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
University's Jordan College of Arts Dean, Ron Caltabiano, is having a blast with the second annual Butler Arts Fest. The theme this year is fables, fairy tales, and physics. And Sharon Gamble invited Ron to explain why one of these things is not like the others, and that's okay.
So, I have to start with the crazy theme this year. Fables and fairy tales make sense together. How did physics get tangled up in the theme?
You know, we work across campus at Butler, and so we're always looking for connections between the programs. So we had various possibilities on our mind, and then we got a call from the Indianapolis Symphony wanting to do this program about the physics of music. And that's actually on the Encore weekend at Arts Fest.
Right.
So with a great opportunity to bring in the ISO and our interest in working across campus between the arts programs and the liberal arts and sciences programs,
sure.
we found a great avenue for us to collaborate.
I'm just glad you didn't add pharmaceuticals there. I'm thinking literally across campus about the pharmacy school. So what was reaction like when you announced this theme and encouraged your program partners both on and off campus to think about
how
to fit into this umbrella?
We got a lot of quizzical looks, I would say. but some folks immediately got it. So, you know, the arts and sciences work together all the time, and everything about music is acoustical and those sciences. And when we talk about other kinds of physics, every dance movement has physics attached to it. And so we have a science educator, Mark Kessling, who's a great educator and a great speaker, doing a free lecture on the physics of dance as represented in Cinderella, which Butler Ballet is doing this year. We've taken some less serious connections between physics and the other elements by picking up the first science fiction opera ever written, at least we think it is, with The World on the Moon, 1777 by Haydn, and that we're doing, in the Holcomb Observatory in the planetarium at Butler. So here you've got an 18th century opera reduced in size, reduced in length, set, by the way, in the 1950s and in the Holcomb Observatory, which was actually built around the 1950s. And so there's sort of a playful connection between physics and fairy tale, because the opera itself is a fairy tale, as most operas are.
And you're going to get a whole new group of people who've never been in the observatory before to go in there.
Right. The Holcomb Observatory is a magical place.
It really is.
And, you know, the planetarium where we're staging the opera typically only has about 85 seats in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, that's barely enough for any kind of audience. Well, we're even taking half of that out for the stage set.
Oh.
So we are going to do the Haydn opera for 40 people at a time.
That's an intimate performance. That's like being in someone's home,
indeed,
grand home, but back in the day
and
hearing people play just for you.
Well, it will be just for you. And I think all of the six performances are going to be very intimate experiences and absolutely unique experiences for everyone.
You know, you mentioned the ISO at the start of our conversation. Let's talk about that ISO project, which is fascinating.
You know, they're working with some great folks from MIT and are going to do a program that includes all sorts of music from Baroque music to very contemporary music, talk about how the physics of music are involved in the production of all of these pieces.
Hmm.
So it's not going to be your typical ISO concert, and I think it's going to be so great to hear the ISO at Schrott in a very intimate setting. They're doing two performances on the 25th and 26th.
They've played at Schrott already, right?
Yes, they did Classical Christmas.
Right.
At Schrott. And so we know they like the space,
right,
and all that. And it's a terrific way to hear the ISO.
Yeah, absolutely. Great acoustic and great sight lines as well.
Yeah, indeed.
You have a really... that's a you plural, really interesting collaboration between Deborah Asante and a Cirque du Soleil aerialist. How did that get put together?
The Cirque du Soleil aerialist, Tavy Stutz, is actually an alum of Butler.
Oh.
Went through our theater program and dance, graduated, I think, 2002. He went on to do things like America's Got Talent and works with Cirque du Soleil very often. He does films and all sorts of dance work. He's a really remarkable young artist. In the meantime, I've been wanting to bring a storyteller to Butler Arts Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, how do we make a storytelling experience that have the substance, have the feel of Butler Arts Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about unusual combinations and innovative concepts. And so I proposed to Tabby and to the wonderful actor, Deborah Sante,
mm-hmm.
That they might be interested in talking to each other. And they thought, you know, the dean is crazy. they have come up with something beautiful, heartfelt. It's going to be an extraordinary experience to have storytelling and aerial acrobatics on the same stage at Schrott at the same time.
And this is the first time to do anything. Have you flown anybody in a theater?
We have not.
Production
we have
yet?
Not flown anybody at Schrott.
Yeah.
So our riggers are hard at work.
Yeah, I guess. And this is called Once Upon a Dream.
It is Once Upon a Dream, starring Deborah Sante and Tavy Stotts.
Blind Boys of Alabama and My Brightest Diamond, how do they fit in with Fables, Fairy Tales, and Physics?
Well, if you know what My Brightest Diamond sounds like, you know that she is a storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And there are fabulist and fairy tale elements to much of what she does.
Sure.
And, you know, I love unusual combinations like the aerialist and the storyteller.
I think that's getting out there in the world now. I don't think it's a secret.
and so when we had a choice, the possibility to be the first presenters of this combination of acts that's been working together just on and off for the last year and be the first people to bring them to Indiana, I just jumped all over it. And I can't wait to hear what an indie rock star and a jazz gospel group sound like when they work together.
Mm.
And honestly, I actually know what they sound like. And it's amazing. It's amazing. I'm also so interested in blended audiences. And I think that event is going to have a very wide audience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great perspective, too. Speaking of fables and stories, one of the classic stories that a lot of people know in its orchestral setting, Till Eulenspiegel's Merry Pranks,
yes.
You're doing in a two-piano version?
No, I'm sorry. That's a little misleading.
Okay.
We're doing a version for six instruments, a chamber version. Now, you might say that Till Eulenspiegel is all about orchestration.
Yeah.
Right? So how does that translate into a chamber group? Well, I think it depends on the chamber group, and we have truly an outstanding ensemble of Butler faculty and ISO players that are coming together to make a really, really special performance of Till. And we put it between these two masterpieces for two pianos, Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals, which we're doing with the very amusing Ogden Nash poetry, and the George Crumb Music for a Summer Evening,
sure.
Which is mysterious and exotic.
Tell us a little bit about the two maples.
Right. You know, we actually have an accidental alignment of Russian fairy tale in Butler Arts Fest this year. Two Maples is a short, very sweet fairy tale play by a Russian author. It is a great play for children and adults. And it is something that Elena Artemyev, faculty member at Butler Theater and Russian herself, is directing. It's going to be, I think it's a truly interesting insight into a slightly non-European culture that has some fantastic elements to it. It runs for 2 weeks during Arts Fest and at the Black Box Theater. And it's a great event for, as I said, for adults and for children.
That's nice to have something that kids can come to as well.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
You have two great gallery spaces in Schrott. What visual art will be up during the festival?
We've got some great visual art. We've got Angela Lopez, a young Chicago artist, who we are featuring in our main gallery. Angela's work is is, I would say, mythical and fabulistic. It talks about the power of the living experience of humans and of animals, tying in the fable element.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you go online and look for Angela Lopez, you'll see some remarkable art. And she's our primary featured artist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We've got some students that have created pieces for the special art shows that are related on fables and on physics.
Mm-hmm.
There's even an art show related to the ICO performance talks about the resembles the triptych elements of John Aikman's piece. And so there will be art just everywhere.
And if you're catching us in the middle of the conversation, you might not realize that there are ticketed events that cost a modest fee, but there are also some free events.
Indeed.
That are part of Butler Arts Fest.
There are, I think there are probably 20 or 30 events with ticket prices, and there are 25, I think, free events. And you can find all of those things on our website. And it's very easy to go to the Butler Arts Fest website and click on events and free events, and mm-hmm. you'll get a listing of all 25 events that are open to the public and are free.
What's the project as part of this year's Arts Fest that surprised you the most?
My goodness. I think that it might be The Soldier's Tale. The Soldier's Tale, L'Histoire du Soldat by Stravinsky, written 100 years ago. It was originally written for a traveling theater company.
Mm-hmm.
So just a few musicians, 7 musicians, I believe. I'd have to check the score and refresh my memory. And originally for two or three or sometimes 4 actors and occasionally a dancer or two.
Mm-hmm.
We are producing a new version of L'Histoire du Soldat, of The Soldier's Tale, with a newly edited score. We have professional musicians from the ISO and from Butler faculty, and the cast and dance company that's part of this is going to be rather large and rather interesting from that point of view.
Ooh.
So instead of having just 2 dancers, we'll have 6. Instead of having single people portraying characters, we'll have several. And it's going to be a whole new experience with this really fun, very accessible piece. It's going to be a ball for everybody.
Sharon Gamble with Butler University's Jordan College of Arts Dean Ron Caltabiano. Find out about all of this year's Butler's Arts Fest offerings at butlerartsfest.com. Again, that's butlerartsfest.com. Well, Sharon, here we are, coming up on the middle of March, and you know what they say?
What do they say?
Beware the Ides of March.
The Ides of March,
yeah,
so
yeah, for
true.
The 15th of March. It's the Ides.
Right.
I mean, we do have St. Paddy's Day, too, but you usually don't have to be too aware, or be aware, beware of that.
Is that a dagger I see behind
me? Yes. But beware the Ides of March. But that you can beware of, and also to be aware of other things on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
What do you got going on?
Well, you know, you might need to fortify yourself with a good strong cup of coffee to be ready for the Ides of March.
Yes.
And if you're hearing us Thursday night, I invite you to do so tomorrow night, March 14th at 7:30. At Foundry Provisions. That's that coffee house that's been open just about a year at 16th and Alabama. And they host occasional Friday night music jams. They're having a Chicago-based world music band called Utah and the High Dukes on this Friday night. And they do a crazy mix of music, Balkan Gypsy, Klezmer, Greek, Scandinavian, and Dixieland with some exotic instruments as well. So think pop, folk, rock. Yeah. More information about the band at modalmusic.com/airplay, modal, M-O-D-A-L, modalmusic.com/airplay. Or you can just show up to Foundry Provisions this Friday night, the 14th at 7:30, to hear Utah and the High Dukes.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Hey, just to do a little overview here of some St. Patrick's Day things that are going on.
All right.
If you're listening to us Thursday night, you can still see the greening of the canal at 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. And then 10 a.m. on Saturday morning, the Ides of March, is the Shamrock Run and Walk. I am Shamrock in the Circle. And then, of course, St. Patty's Day is on Monday with the parade from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. all downtown. And, of course, Golden Ace will be celebrating all day long with their tent, where they have a lot of different Irish performers. And then later on next week, Eunan McIntyre's Zambian concert on March 20th at the Marian University Theater at 7:30 p.m. And this is really sort of fun music. You probably maybe heard it on some of the NPR shows, and should be some great Celtic music at Marian University. So a lot of fun things coming up to celebrate St. Paddy's Day.
Love it. Hey, speaking of the Marian University,
which is always more fun than celebrating the Ides of March.
Well, I'm worried. Do you have some enemies out there in the world, Travis? You're scaring me a little. I feel like I ought to assign a bodyguard to you or something, following you around. if you see someone in a toga, be very careful, please. Especially since it's a little cold for togas right now. Hey, speaking of the Marian University Theater, which you just were, it's going to be the venue for the next Indianapolis Men's Chorus concert. They're calling it Celebrate Spring with the B List. If you like the letter B, it feels like they ought to be partners with you in the alphabet.
Mm, yeah,
if you
really
like the letter B, you'll love this show. They'll sing some Beatles, some Bernstein, and some Barbara. You know, Barbara without the middle A,
yeah,
Streisand, Baba. There's only one Barbara, tunes too. Those concerts are on Friday, March 28th and Saturday, March 29th, 8 o'clock both nights, Marian University Theater. And you can Google that and get more information about the Indianapolis Men's Chorus Celebrate Spring with the B-List.
Very good. Hey, some great concerts coming up, as always, at the Jazz Kitchen. Just a few to highlight. Kenny Phelps and Friends on Monday the 17th, no cover. Clifford Ratliff, big band, Wednesday the 19th. And then coming up next weekend, Regina Carter, Southern Comfort on Friday and Saturday the 21st and 22nd. Should be a lot of fun. Great shows at the Jazz Kitchen.
Travis, I have something to take your mind off the Ides of March. It is actually taking place on the Ides of March at the Idlejarg Museum from 1 to 4, and it's the Spring Social Round Dance, sponsored by the Idlejarg Museum and the Urban Andean League of Indianapolis, and you can learn how to perform American Indian social dances. You're welcome even if you don't have a drop of Native American or American Indian blood.
But, like sort of square dances, but, uh-huh, but and very cool.
Yeah, group dancing, 1 to 4 at the Idlejarg on Saturday the 15th.
Hey, interesting play that has opened up at the IRT, Other Desert Cities, and is running through April 5th, and James Still is going to be directing, has directed this play, and kind of an interesting story, basically about a family with a daughter who's decided to publish a very controversial memoir about the family, sort of like ripped from the headlines, if you will. It does contain some strong language, but sounds like a really, really interesting script, sort of about how an all-American family ends up in the tabloids. And again, this is called Other Desert Cities, and it's at the IRT through April 5th.
So here's the setup. One afternoon in the town where you live, Anthony arrives at Caroline's door bearing waffle fries, a beat-up copy of Walt Whitman's Song of Myself from Leaves of Grass, and an urgent assignment from their high school literature teacher. Caroline's lived most of her life online because she's sick and she hasn't been to school in months, but she's as quick and sardonic as Anthony is athletic and popular. And as these two let down their guard and share secrets, this seemingly vanilla poetry assignment unlocks a much deeper mystery that has brought them together. If you're thinking, hey, sick young lady, teenage love, sounds a little bit like The Fault in Our Stars, it's because the playwright Lauren Gundertson considers John Green, who wrote that novel and the film that's soon to come out, John Green is a bit of a muse to Lauren Gundertson. The play is called I and You, and it just opened this weekend at the Phoenix Theater. It's part of what they call a rolling world premiere, meaning it's getting multiple productions around the country at about the same time. It plays through April 13th on the Basile stage at the Phoenix Theater. More information at phoenixtheater.org.
Very cool. Sharon, you may need to help me with this name, but I believe it is Vadim Kolodenko. And
that is, yeah.
Very good. Okay, so American Pianists Association is presenting Vadim Kolodenko, winner of the Clyburn, in a solo concert at the Eugene Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center this Sunday, March 16th at 3:30. And there are student tickets available as well as regular adult tickets. You can get more information, of course, at AmericanPianists.org for this concert coming up on Sunday.
Travis, all hail Fredonia.
I love the Marx Brothers.
Thank you for getting that reference. It's Duck Soup, the 1933 Marx Brothers classic. If you've only ever seen A Day at the Races,
so
A Night at the Opera, you need to add Duck Soup to your portfolio. It's being played, it's being shown at 7 o'clock March 29th at the Garfield Park Arts Center, part of the series that Eric Grayson has organized down there. The country of Fredonia is out of money and teetering on war with its neighbors. In desperation, they turn to rich Mrs. Teasdale, but she insists she will lend the country money only if Rufus T. Firefly, Rufus T. Firefly, Groucho Marx, is appointed leader. And if it sounds silly and loopy, it's because it is, and it's full of silly music and plot twists, and there won't be a quiz at the end. But if you go, you'll also see a reel of trailers of Marx Brothers films, including a lot of material that was seen only in the trailers and never made it to the movies were advertising. So learn more about that event at the Garfield Park Arts website.
Last thing I've got, Sharon, is on Thursday, March 20th at 6 p.m. out in Book Mamas in Irvington, the Irvington Ukulele Jam. That's right. Everyone is welcome to grab your uke and join the group in the Underground 9 studio at Book Mamas in Irvington, Thursday the 20th at 6 o'clock.
And my last item is, if you've been saying, gosh, I wish it would warm up a little bit so I could go caving.
That's not what I've been thinking at all,
yeah,
but I'm sure somebody is.
Somebody in our listening audience is thinking that. Blue Spring Caverns opens for the season this Sunday, March 16th. Weather permitting is the important caveat. You can explore a mile-long subterranean river in a guided tour boat and examine the natural forces that are still at work today, slowly dissolving limestone to create the cave's custom chambers. So Google Blue Spring Caverns Tours for more information about that.
Excellent. Well, Sharon, we will be back next week on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
There's great interest in Brazil right now, due in part to the upcoming World Cup and Summer Olympics being held there. Local artists Archer Silva and Kyle Long have developed a range of Brazilian programming for the public library this spring, including creating original art and having several film screenings and performances and programs on Brazilian music, and it's all free. Travis DiNicola spoke with Archer and Kyle about the project.
Archer, Kyle, welcome to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So lots going on with Brazil. I mean, now we're airing this after you guys did your huge big carnival party at the Jazz Kitchen, which I heard was excellent. But there's even more than that going on. And it's curious because, I mean, part of it, you know, obviously, World Cup is going to be in Brazil, you know, this summer. The next Summer Olympics is in Brazil. It just seems like there's a lot of sort of, you know, talk about Brazil and Brazilian culture going on. And you guys are kind of enjoying that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Archer, I mean, you're Brazilian, so I mean, which is awesome. So, you know, I mean, you're obviously enjoying having that in Indy. But what's going on here? I mean, do you get a sense like there's more people kind of, you know, interested in Brazil?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I grew up in a country with a very low self-esteem, you know. We owe money to the rest of the world, all of this stuff. But it's a different country now. It's a new times, a fresh start for Brazil. More economic power, and it's an opportunity to display the culture that's been there all along. So it's a good, storefront to the world now with the highlight of the World Cup and the Olympics.
How often do you get back there? I mean, every now and then? I'm sure we're not often enough, but...
I was just there like last Wednesday.
Really?
So yeah, it's I try to go every year, you know, to see my family and to see friends, and so yeah, I try to make a trip at least every year for a couple of weeks.
So how is, I mean, getting ready for World Cup, which, you know, is kicking off in June? I mean, how is that like sort of affecting the country? I mean, that's got to be just, everyone's got to be kind of crazy for that, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's two arguments there. One is that a lot of people are excited to receive the world. It's you know, we have a tradition of soccer in Brazil that is super strong. Again, growing up, that was the only time every 4 years that we felt like a tremendous pride. What we did was through the only thing we were pretty excellent at. So there's that, and then there's another competing idea that. You know, the country has infrastructure problems,
sure.
And there's some people protesting that as well, that, you know, kind of like we don't need more stadiums, we need hospitals and other...
And sidewalks and
exactly,
better schools
and
stuff
those
like that,
things.
Sure.
But with that said, I got to say that where I grew up and also in Rio de Janeiro, the city is looking really good. The downtown of these places are looking pretty amazing, you know. Fresh asphalt, and like it does look a lot better. It looks fresh and new and kind of ready, you know. So there's a lot of like construction sites everywhere, you know, at the airports. There's like lots of things going on, construction, and it seems like they're gonna take care of business and be ready, it seems.
Very cool. Excellent. Yeah, that's going to be a very exciting time, of course. But Brazil in Indianapolis, you know, it was interesting. I was talking with a friend of mine who lives on the East Coast, and I'd mentioned, you know, a couple different people I know who are from Brazil and stuff. And she was saying, it seems like there's, you know, and she was asking me if it was in part because of the racing culture here, you know, and the Speedway and the 500 that, you know, Brazilians end up here. But it seems, I mean, that's part of it, but even more than that.
Yeah, I mean, we only found out this fondness of Midwesterners with Brazil. Mm-hmm. Or Brazilian culture through the parties that we throw. And so since the first one, exactly 5 years ago.
Through Cultural Cannibals.
Through Cultural Cannibals, yeah. We discovered that people have this fascination with Brazilian culture here.
Mm-hmm.
We threw our first party expecting about 100 people. You know, that would be a win if 100 people showed up. And over 300 people showed up at the day. So... You know, it was kind of a wake-up call that, you know, there was a need to fulfill with these other cultures, including the culture of Brazil, and that's what Cultural Cannibals does. We deal with cultures from around the world and try to present in the most dignified and fun way possible.
Kyle, let me get you in on the conversation here. Tell me a little bit more about Cultural Cannibals and the work that you guys do. Through that.
Sure. Well, it touches on a lot of different areas, and this program at the library is a good example of that. We're primarily focused, I would say, on musical events. That's pretty much how people know us through the concerts and parties and things we've done. But there is definitely another side to it that wants to investigate these cultures we're working with in a deeper way. And this, again, this project at the library will allow us to do that. The event is called Celebrate Brazil. And Artur and I are going to be doing different things together through this program to sort of, you know, share this our love of Brazilian culture in a deeper way. Artur is going to be doing an art exhibit, working with some students here in the community, and I'm going to do a series of workshops educating people about Brazilian hip-hop, which is a real unique way to learn about Brazilian culture in general.
That's a pretty specific style there, right?
Yeah, but Brazilian hip-hop is a little different than hip-hop here in the U.S. It draws a lot more on traditional influences, and it's a great way to learn about regional culture and music in Brazil and get a sense of the geography and the social makeup of the country and some of the political concerns that the people have, as well as, you know, it's great music. So
it's drawing on traditional Brazilian style music. Brazilian,
yeah. There's music. There's if you listen to Brazilian
like,
hip hop,
like samba.
Yeah, there's elements of samba and other regional rhythms. You know, there's guys rapping over samba beats. There's
Pifano
guys, rapping over music called forró, which is like an accordion music from the country. So it's very different than American style hip hop, and it really gives you a sense of. The traditional culture of Brazil, but filtered through this modern sort of lens.
That's pretty cool. That sounds great. So, I mean, you guys are kicking off an event with the library, Indianapolis Public Library, on April 9th, and then doing a whole bunch of other events following throughout the spring. Tell me about this big kickoff on the 9th. It's a free event, big
sure.
party.
Yeah, it's going to be a party. I'll be DJing Brazilian music there,
mm-hmm.
everything from samba.
And this is at Central Library, right?
Yes, it's at Central Library at the Clues Auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be spinning Brazilian music. There'll be Brazilian food. And I guess the highlight of the night is going to be a performance from Yuri Santos and his capoeira group.
Hmm.
Yuri's based in Bloomington, but he grew up in Salvador, Bahia. And he's a internationally respected master of capoeira, which is a Brazilian art form that originated in Angola in Africa, was brought here by the slaves. It combines martial arts with dance and music making and storytelling. And Yuri's
it's pretty amazing to see it live. I've had the opportunity a couple times to see it done, and the way that the guys that are performing capoeira, kind of fling their bodies around, lots of kind of like high kicking style, mm-hmm. and it was done. My understanding was it was actually done as a true martial art, but sort of disguised, right, as
right.
a dance form,
yeah.
so that the slave owners wouldn't realize that they were practicing a martial mm-hmm. art.
Exactly. I mean, like a lot of things that came via. Slavery through mm-hmm. to the Americas, lots of things had to be disguised. The syncretism of religion and of this martial arts. But
mm-hmm.
the only way that they found to practice this martial arts to be able to escape eventually was disguising it as a dance.
Yeah.
So that they carry on the tradition by disguising it as a dance, and it's a beautiful thing to look at.
That's pretty cool stuff. Now, Archer, you're going to be doing a visual art project. I mean, and a lot of people, of course, know you in town as a visual artist, and the large, very colorful prints that you do, whether it's on buildings or on posters and things like that. So what are you going to be doing for the library?
So, yeah, I'm excited about this project. We're going to be working with students here from Heron High School.
Mm-hmm.
The work that I proposed for the library is for the learning curve.
Sure.
And it's photography-based collage, digital collage.
And the learning curve is their sort of like their kids area on the first floor, really cool space.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to be creating a mural with a Brazilian theme
mm-hmm.
with the help of the students here from Heron High School. And it will be installed prior to the opening on April 9th. So I'm really looking forward to working with these images that I'm really familiar with and the images that I truly like to work with. And I have plenty of photographs to draw that from.
Indeed. That's going to be excellent. A great opportunity for them to be working on that, too. And Kyle, I know you were about to jump in with something, too. It sounded like...
Oh, sure. Yeah. I just wanted to emphasize that this event, the opening event, is a great chance for people. People in Indiana are lucky because we have access to really... interesting Brazilian people who really are masters of what they do and really care about their culture, like Artur and like Yuri Santos. It's like to me, these people were lucky to have them here, and
mm-hmm.
they
well,
add
thanks.
So much to the community. So that opening event will be a great opportunity to come and, not just, read about the Brazilian culture, not just watch a film about Brazilian culture, but
sure.
really experience it firsthand and have a chance to talk to Artur and Yuri and learn firsthand about what they do and the cultural traditions they represent.
And then, and as you said, and after the big opening on April 9th, then there's going to be a lot of other events
right.
that the library is going to be hosting, workshops, activities,
yes.
films, music, and then and the library will have all that schedule mm-hmm. on their website as well and stuff.
Sure. We're going to do a series of Brazilian film screenings, which include cult classic City of God, as well as some lesser-known films like Central Station. And there's going to be a dance workshop, done by our friend Camila Cavalcanti, teaching folks how to samba. And this isn't just based out of Central Library.
Mm.
I'll be doing my workshop at some of the branches, at almost every branch in the city.
That's cool.
And I know Camila's nice. Doing her workshops at some of the other branches as well. So this is going to be throughout April and May. This will be traveling around to the various branches, even though the hub is definitely central.
That's a pretty big commitment on the library's part. Do you
yeah.
know what sort of prompted them to do this?
I think it's the same thing that prompted you to make the initial comments, mm-hmm. which is
yeah.
Brazilian prominence in the world right now. You
mm-hmm.
know, people are curious about what is this country.
Yeah.
It's the entire South America. All the other countries in South America fit within Brazil. Brazil is a very large
it's
country.
A huge country. Yeah,
it's bigger than the continental United States. And so I think people are curious about this place that is hosting the World Cup, mm-hmm. the Olympics. And the library picked up on that. They probably got some requests.
Yeah.
And there you have it.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, before I let you guys go, other cultural cannibal stuff that you guys are doing besides what's going on with the library?
Sure. In April, Sunday, April 27th, we have a great event at the Jazz Kitchen. It's a Punjabi brass band called Red Bharat, and they're so much fun. It's really exciting. So that's a big one coming up on the radar.
That sounds pretty cool. Okay. You said Punjabi brass band?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. They're based out of New York.
Okay.
And they're touring through the Midwest. We've had them here twice before, and it's mm-hmm. always super exciting and fun. And it's sort of like an extension of our Bollywood Bhangra parties, and I'll be DJing that night as well. And yeah.
Excellent.
High energy.
Sounds good. And of course, you can always get more information on all that stuff at culturalcannibals.com. Excellent. Guys, thanks so much for coming in Art of the Matter today.
Hey, thank you, Travis. So much.
Travis DiNicola with artist Archer Silva and Kyle Long. You can find out more about their programs for the Indianapolis Public Library at imcpl.org, imcpl.org, or visit Artur and Kyle's page at culturalcannibals.com, culturalcannibals.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll get a preview of a new program that allows early symptom Alzheimer's patients to interact with artwork at the IMA.
Wow, that sounds very fascinating. Well, I get to chat with saxophonist Sophie Fott and artist Stephen Sickles about a new project that they're working on. Plus, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? Please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.